think I know any Japanese who think it's a good idea to have the Olympics. Yeah.
This week, the Tokyo Olympics will be opening amidst the ongoing world pandemic and a massive increase in COVID-19 cases in Tokyo.
It is criminal for Japanese government not to cancel the Olympics.
Is this criminal insanity consistent with holding the Olympics in the middle of the pandemic?
Short of a world war, the overthrow of capitalism, or an environmental collapse, the International Olympic Committee's long-term economic future will be bright.
Is money behind the need to have the Olympics with no visitors? From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Tia Marie Coatley, a Pacifica affiliate, WXOX 97.1 FM, Louisville, Kentucky. Against the holding of the Olympics are taking place in Tokyo as the Olympics begin. Despite this dangerous and deadly situation, Prime Minister Suga's administration and the International Organizing Committee for the Olympics, with support from the Biden administration, are pushing ahead with the event. At the same time, 10 years after the Fukushima nuclear disaster, the Fukushima nuclear plant, along with the Japanese government, is threatening to release 1 million tons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean. The previous Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe, also decided to have the baseball and Paralympics in Fukushima to show that Fukushima had recovered from the 2011 meltdown. The Azuma Stadium was refurbished, yet thousands of bags of radioactive waste are still scattered throughout Fukushima Prefecture. Chieko Shina, in a statement translated by Carol Hisasue, talks about what citizens of Fukushima are going through today with both the continuing nuclear waste crisis and the coronavirus pandemic.
安倍前首相が福島第一原発事故はアンダーコントロールと嘘を並べ立てて招聘した東京オリンピック。原発事故は終わった。
Former Prime Minister Abe sought to bring the Olympics to Tokyo in 2020 to support his dishonest claimthat the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear catastrophe was under control, that the accident has been resolved, and Fukushima has recovered. The reality remains that adverse health effects, from pediatric thyroid cancer to adult diseases, continue to rise. How can one condone a so-called recovery Olympics when lives, livelihoods, homelands, and children's futures continue to be taken away from Fukushima? After a long history of the ravages of nuclear disasters from Hiroshima, Nagasaki, the Bikini Atolls, Chernobyl and beyond, and the Fukushima nuclear plant accident, we should have learned that the human race cannot coexist with nuclear weapons and nuclear power, and yet this country continues to betray its people. I believe this huge lie stems from a capitalist system, a capitalist society that retains interest in nuclear power. The powers that be do not hesitate to take us into wars if it serves their needs. Brainwashing children is just one of their heavy-handed ways to perpetuate the war machine. After the March 11, 2011 Fukushima nuclear disaster, the government has misinformed the public about radiation levels and exposed children to high levels of radiation. Furthermore, today they're targeting children through the education system in promoting nuclear power as safe and sound. School trips to the Great Northeastern Earthquake and Nuclear Disaster Museum in Futaba City. Teacher training at this site. High school classes taught by visiting members of the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry. Students from High School Science Club who were made to visit the Fukushima Daiichi reactor facilities had to remove their protective gear when media came to photograph them. This was reported in newspapers and over the internet to show how even the children are in ordinary clothes, and that the accident was being resolved, that Fukushima is safe. The Suga administration's assaults have escalated as Japan moves towards the Olympics. In order to promote how Fukushima is safe to the world, they began the Olympic torch relay on March 25th from J Village in the highly contaminated towns of Naraha and Hirono. At Fukushima City's Azuma Stadium, the site for the softball and baseball games, junior high and high school baseball team members were recruited to replace radioactively contaminated natural grass with artificial turf. Unmasked, smiling children were paraded around for the benefit of television audiences. One after another, children are being exposed to radiation to promote the fiction of everything being safe and sound. They're also trying to bring in elementary and middle school students to the games beyond the official limit of 7,150 spectators as part of a cooperative school spectator program. Neither the Suga administration nor Governor Horiuchi have the least bit of concern for COVID risks or radiation exposure. There are serious issues at stake beyond the so-called Recovery Olympics. According to reports from the 17th Thyroid Exam Evaluation Meeting, the number of thyroid cancer patients and those suspected of cancer has grown to 256. Some reports say the actual number exceeds this by nearly 30. This is the reality of Fukushima. There has been no recovery. A recovery Olympics? It's a complete fabrication. We must cancel the Tokyo Olympics now.
Tokyo Gorin wa soku chushi shika arimasen.
Former Japanese Swiss ambassador Mitsuhei Murata spoke about the denial and criminality of the politicians running Japan.
Because the myth of safety of nuclear energy has been broken after by Fukushima accident. So I am ardently voicing against the restart of nuclear reactors in Japan.
When Fukushima took place, Prime Minister Kan was worried that the explosion, that the meltdowns would lead to the forced evacuation of the people of Tokyo. Was that a real concern for the people of Japan?
After that incident, when the accident was not brought under control, there was a secret paper produced by the chairman of the Nuclear Energy Commission forecasting the necessity of evacuating 50 million people living around the capital in case the worst happens again. Actually, there is a very important problem we are facing. That is, the Nuclear Energy Commission has authorized the restart of Tokai No. 2 nuclear reactor, which is only 100 kilometers from Tokyo. I am absolutely against the restart of this reactor. So I would like to ask you to help Japan to stop. Yes.
The question I have is, if there was a real concern of the Japanese government that Fukushima would lead to a forced evacuation of 50 million people, also Japan is on the ring of fire with all these earthquake areas around Japan, why would the government move ahead with restarting these nuclear reactors?
I cannot understand. And people with normal understanding couldn't understand. And it's abnormal. And I attribute it to the pursuit of economic interests. I fear very much that another accident could take place. And before that, we should stop. Otherwise, what is happening in Fukushima, if it spreads in the world, it will be a living hell, the earth.
There are over 1 million tons of radioactive water in tanks surrounding Fukushima. If there's a major earthquake, they could rupture. The water could go in the Pacific Ocean. There seems to be no concern by the government about this.
Even the IAEA is tacitly supporting the putting all the contaminated water into the ocean. The IAEA is now problematic. And also these international organizations like International Olympic Committee is now under criticism because nobody believes that Fukushima is under control. it is the obligation of this committee, International Olympic Committee, to re-verify this infamous assertion. But I have sent many letters to President Bach, Thomas Bach. He doesn't react.
This idea that it's been decontaminated, how can you decontaminate Fukushima when they still have yet to remove the melted nuclear rods in the reactor?
And the outstanding experts say it will never be possible.
If they are able to have the baseball games there, and there was a major earthquake at that time, would the people in the Olympic Village there at the baseball be in danger in Fukushima?
It goes without saying. It is a catastrophe.
So this Olympic Committee is putting its athletes and the people who sports who come to the Olympics in danger?
The Olympic Committee, International Olympic Committee, should have reacted when all the commitments for the Tokyo Olympic Games were ignored. And they still continue to ride with the false assertion Fukushima is under control. And President, this committee, including President Thomas Bach, has all materials and documents to be convinced that Fukushima is far from being under control.
There's also the issue of the funding of the Olympics. Large amount of money has gone to the funding, yet many of the residents are still suffering. People are having a rough time who are survivors. Do you find that as a problem?
That is the morality itself, to put aside the miseries of Fukushima and be concentrated on the Olympics. And the Olympics serves as the tool to hide Fukushima and to postpone what should be done immediately in Fukushima. It's a pretext to do it after the Olympics. So Tokyo Olympics now can be regarded as both immoral and radioactive.
Former Japanese ambassador to Switzerland, Mitsuhei Murata. Tsukuru Force is with the Pacific Asian Nuclear Free Peace Alliance. At the Japanese consulate in San Francisco on June 11th, she said that the Japanese government is endangering the whole world by holding the Olympics during the pandemic.
So my name is Tsukuru Force. I am a founding member of Pacific Asian Nuclear Free Peace Alliance in LA, and I'm here to speak out in protest of Japan's stance on nuclear weapons and also nuclear power plants and also the Tokyo Olympics. So last time I was here, it was January 11th, 2020, the day after my dear friend Michiko Kato, a Fukushima evacuee, Fukushima survivor, passed away with a cancer. And I was filled with much grief, and that was what I spoke about on that day. Today, I'm here and I'm angry. I'm very angry about the mishandling, or shall I say, no handling of the situation in Fukushima by the Japanese government. And also, as I said, Japanese government stance on nuclear weapons. So this January, TPNW, Treaty on Nuclear Weapons Ban, passed. So in the international community, nuclear weapons are illegal. And Japan, who is a survivor of two nuclear attacks in 1945, refused to sign this treaty, which is insane and frankly an insult to Hiroshima and Nagasaki survivors. So I'm a graduate of a high school in Hiroshima where 350 students died by a nuclear attack in 1945, August 6, 1945. So I grew up with a lot of people. A lot of my friends knew someone or related to someone who survived or died in that nuclear attack. A lot of my teachers were survivors of Hiroshima bombing. So I speak from my personal experience and my personal relationships and my personal legacy, that what Japanese government is doing or not doing is really, as I said, an insult to the survivors. And I plead to the Japanese government now to sign TPNW and take a leadership position in the world to ban nuclear weapons forever. Yeah, and it is a shame, frankly, that the Japanese government is complicit in the United States stance on nuclear weapons. But now, let me speak about the Olympics, because I'm outraged that on like June 11th, right now, 2021, we are still having this discussion about the Olympics. The Tokyo Olympics should not happen, and we should never have won the bid to the Olympics. The idea of Tokyo Olympics was founded upon lies and greed. So I'm just gonna quote what happened. So in 2013, in Rio, Brazil, former Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, stated, you know, in the Olympics bid speech that, let me assure you, the situation in Fukushima is under control. It has never done or will do any damage to Tokyo. So he spoke these words in front of the whole world. The apparent lies, right? So the Japanese government lied to the whole world to win the Olympics. And Olympics was, you know, given to Japan. And that was wrong. It was labeled as the Recovery Olympics, right? Because it was to promote this idea of the situation in Fukushima is done and dealt with, which is a complete lie. I mean, as Steve and as Chizu-san spoke previously, almost nothing has been done to mend the situation with the plant. Like, any of the fuel rods have not been taken out. And frankly, I do not think that there is, or they do not have a plan to clean up the plant. Also, people in and around Fukushima are suffering. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands, displaced, lost their home, and they will not be able to go back to their hometown. Oh, thank you so much, 50,000. So yeah, they will not be able to go back to their hometowns ever. So, you know, it is really an outrage that the Japan is going through with this Olympics in the middle of the pandemic. A lot of people have died and are dying. A lot of people are ending up on the streets because they lost their jobs, lost their home. In October of 2020, the number of suicides among Japanese women went up by 83%. So with the nuclear disaster and also with this pandemic, who is taking the most damage? Who is being hurt? Women and children. And it is a shame. It is criminal for Japanese government not to cancel the Olympics. But let me just express my anger and frustration with the IOC, International Olympics Committee. Let me just quote this. So John Coates, an IOC vice president, said that the games would proceed even if the whole city was still under a state of emergency. And the Thomas Bach, the IOC president, said the athletes definitely can make the Olympics dreams come true. We have to make some sacrifices to make this possible. What do you mean by that? Sacrifices? Whose sacrifices? Are they saying that Japanese people have to sacrifice their lives? And actually, the athletes have to risk their lives to, you know, make this Olympic happen. And then the IOC went on to say that even if the Japanese Prime Minister Suga said no to the Olympics, they will still proceed with the Olympics. I mean, this proves to me that the IOC is an imperialist organization, and they only care about money and profit, and they do not care about the concerns of ordinary people. So today, I am pleading and demanding to the Japanese government in front of the San Francisco Consulate General that please cancel the Tokyo Olympics and spend money where it's needed. Spend the money to house and feed the poor and displaced, because that's what Japan needs right now. Thank you so much.
Amazing Grace. This is Pacifica Radio's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm your host, Tia Marie Coatley of Pacifica affiliate station WXOX 97.1 FM, Louisville, Kentucky. Professor George Wright, Emeritus Chico State, is an expert on class and race in sports from the Super Bowl to the Olympics. He spoke with KPFT Pacifica host Akua Holt about the business and politics behind the Tokyo Olympics.
Welcome to COVID Race and Democracy, Professor Wright.
Thank you, Akua, and thanks, Steve.
According to Portside, an online magazine, 10,000 volunteers have quit their post in the Tokyo Olympics with games just a few months away. That is one out of every eight volunteers needed to pull off the 2021 Olympics. Now, my question to you, Professor Wright, should the world be engaged in an Olympics during the time of a massive pandemic?
My answer is yes. And it's a complicated set of reasonings, but I'm not a doomsayer at this point related to holding the Olympics. As long as the Olympics are conducted with protocols that prevent the some 11,000 athletes that are supposed to arrive in Tokyo over the next couple of weeks, and that it is safe for officials and trainers. As you know, just last Thursday, the various officials, the Tokyo Organizing Committee, the Tokyo government, the Japanese government, as well as the International Olympic Committee, agreed that there will not be spectators in any of the venues during the Olympic Games. I think we have to remember that when you deal with sport, COVID, and spectators, we've actually lived through three stages so far. The first stage, obviously, was March of 2020, when COVID rampaged the world, and we see the world basically shut down. And obviously, in the area of sport, ranging from the NBA, Major League Baseball, et cetera, everything was put on hold. Starting in the summer, once there was some understanding of what COVID was about and what kind of protocols needed to be done to conduct sporting competition, we saw Major League Baseball, the Premier League in England, the Bundesliga in Germany, we saw the NFL begin to conduct sporting activities. What was important is that spectators weren't allowed into those competitions. But with the advent of vaccines in the winter and the proliferation of vaccines, mainly in North America and also in Europe, we began to see in the spring all of the major sports, whether from racing to football, and I'm talking about global football, not American football, to sports in the United States, resumed competition with various requirements as to the amount of spectators in the arenas.
You accept the government responsibility for the Olympics? The government has said, for example, in Fukushima, they've overcome radiation. They say there's no problems in the Olympic. I mean, what credibility do you believe about the Suga government in Japan? You have confidence in them? They're going to protect the people, not just of they're going to the Olympics, but the people of Japan.
Oh, absolutely no. I don't have any trust for the Japanese government under Prime Minister Abe and now under Prime Minister Suga. The means in which Tokyo was selected to host the Olympic Games back in 2013 exposes the hypocrisy and motives of the Japanese government. As you recall, the International Olympic Committees in March of 2013 met to select the host city. They met in, I think it was Buenos Aires. This was just less than 2 years after the Fukushima triple accident happened. Much of or northeast Japan was in absolute chaos, and the spread of radiation was rampant throughout large parts of northeast Japan and other places as well. And when the IOC met, and the three finalists, as I recall, Tokyo, Istanbul, and Madrid were the three finalists, and each city had to make a presentation as to why they should host the games. And when Tokyo, when Prime Minister Abe actually flew in from St. Petersburg, Russia, to be the head of that presentation committee, when he was asked directly, was the Fukushima accident going to affect hosting the games? And Abe said, no, they will not. And he said, I take full responsibility for that. And then the claim was presented that the games were going to be a way to revitalize national unity. It was going to be a way to confront the economic malaise that Japan had been under for some 30 years. And thirdly, it was presented as if the games were going to stimulate the economy, which and directly was going to reinvigorate the reconstruction projects in northeast Japan. From the outset, the motives of hosting the Tokyo Games had to do with nationalism, had to do with global competition with China, as well as a means to generate profits for Japanese construction companies, developers, et cetera, et cetera. What are the Olympic Games in its entirety, and what is it about? It's a corporate capitalist profit machine that the IOC and particular economic interests and political interests in the host city of the host country benefit from. That's how I address that, Steve.
George Wright, thank you for being with us, and point well taken. While we're all enjoying the sport and the competition, and we're focused on the number of people who have contracted the coronavirus in Japan, you say that our focus should also be on the corporate conglomerates who will benefit in the upcoming Olympics.
Exactly. Yeah, the NBC is the culprit in all of this. Nike is the culprit. Adidas, et cetera, et cetera. That's where our focus should be really driven. The games, they're going to happen. They're not going to be canceled. I think that's on the table. And regardless of what public opinion is, or domestically, internationally, which also shows the disregard that corporations have for public opinion, and certainly the disregard that political parties and political systems have for public opinion. 5 or 6 years ago, when I wrote an article published in Socialist Register 2015 on the International Olympic Committee and its ruling class, and the last sentence I wrote was that short of a world war, the overthrow of capitalism, or an environmental collapse, the International Olympic Committee's long-term economic future will be bright. However many the managerial headaches it will have to cope with in an increasing turbulent world. Tokyo 2020 and now Tokyo 21 is simply another managerial crisis that the International Olympic Committee is attempting to control. Thank you.
Black athletes who have won their way into the Olympics are also being pressured to refrain from speaking out against systematic racism in the U.S. Pacifica affiliate Black Power 96.3 St. Petersburg, Florida, and the People's War radio show looked at the Eugene, California track and field trials.
I just saw this morning. It's a sister who was involved in the Olympic tryouts happening in Eugene, Oregon. I've been to Eugene, Oregon. I've organized in Eugene, Oregon. And Eugene, Oregon is pretty white as a city. But this sister, she, I think, was in third place in the hammer throw. At the podium, where they announcing and giving them their medals, et cetera, the sister turned her back on the national anthem, and she took her T-shirt and threw it over her face and what have you. And she said, like, she feels like it was a setup, that she was set up, because she was told they were not going to do that. And she felt like they did it to mess with her, because they know that she protests all the time when they're doing the flag for her people. And she's lost sponsors because of her stance as an African woman. We should know her name. And, you know, I read that and I was so proud of the sister. And just what it reflects in terms of a growing kind of a dissolution of this arrangement, this colonial arrangement, how the colonizers are breaking free, you know, in various means. I mean, you see the evidence of the loss of the grip that the system has on the brains of our people. You know, what we're looking at is there's this ongoing cracks in the hole, ideologically, that they hold on our people. And the sister, even losing, because she started to quit, even losing these sponsors who pay you the money to be a sellout, whatever, she stood up and refused to do that. So her name is Gwen Berry. Gwen Berry, remember her name, Gwen Berry, because I thought it was such a, and send something to her, saluting her, because she needs to hear a salute coming from you revolutionaries, as opposed to all the other, you know, forces who might say one thing or another. So I just wanted to acknowledge Gwen Berry, not just because she did that, but because it represents a fracture, a growing fracture, the fissures that's growing in this whole system that they've locked us into. People are breaking out. We are breaking out, and the party is going to lead this process. Uhuru, we're going to help Gwen Berry understand what she did.
The clip you just heard was Chairman Omali Eshetela's salute to U.S. Olympic hammer thrower Gwen Berry for her courageous political stance she has taken. Welcome to the People's War Radio Show. I'm Dr. Matsumela Odom.
And I'm Awambi Tangu. Uhuru means freedom in Swahili, and freedom is on our minds 24/7.
The United States track and field Olympic trials were held from June 18th to June 27th in Eugene, Oregon. The U.S. trials are the first step for U.S. athletes to compete in the Summer Olympic Games. This year's Olympic Games are shaping up to be historic on many levels. African women athletes have taken center stage in these trials, creating a buzz and sparking controversy in both colonial and social media. We know that our community is closely following this, and so we're excited to talk about it today. The Summer Olympic Games were scheduled to take place in the summer of 2020, but were postponed due to the coronavirus pandemic. Since being resurrected in 1896, the modern Olympic Games had only been postponed or canceled three times, in 1916, 1940, in 1944. In all three instances, imperialist world wars had caused postponement and cancellation, making 2020 the first time that something other than military contests caused the cancellation of the Olympic Games.
As noted, the modern games were rebirthed in 1896. This was just a little more than 10 years after the Berlin Conference. Subsequent to the British defeat of the Zulu in South Africa, the U.S. defeat of the Sioux Nation, the same year as the Plessy versus Ferguson decision in the United States, and the same year as the Ethiopian defeat of Italy in the Battle of Adwa, and right in the middle of the imperialist scramble for Africa. The Olympic Games have always been attached to military contests. 14 countries participated in the 1896 Summer Olympic Games, 13 European countries, and the United States. Of course, the entire U.S. team was composed of white North Americans, and no women competed in these games. In 1900, Constantin Enriquez de Zubiera, born in Haiti, became the first African to compete in the modern Olympics as a part of the French rugby team. Following his team's victory, he became the first African to win a medal in the Olympics. The Olympic Games are deeply embedded with the history of imperialism, colonialism, and even struggles for self-determination and national liberation.
Most people are familiar with the Black Power salute of Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City. Many do not know that the Black Power salutes were part of a much larger internationalist protest by African athletes in the U.S. in solidarity with anti-colonial struggle across the world, of which the International Black Revolution of the 1960s was an integral part. Much like Colin Kaepernick's knee, the salutes were in fact a compromise to a complete boycott that was originally planned. Since the days of Enriquez de Zubiera, a deep colonial contradiction has occurred with the Summer Olympics. Imperialist countries have found success because of their colonial subjects. Africans have always recognized this contradiction.
Jesse Owens to Wilma Rudolph to John Carlos and Tommy Smith to Edwin Moses, and the list goes on. Africans have known that their performance in the Summer Games are connected to African struggles off the field. This year's games proved to be no different. The International Olympic Committee has placed a ban on political statements and barred the uses of terms like Black Lives Matter on Olympic apparel. Africans have already begun to protest these positions. At the Olympic trials, sprinter Sha'Carri Richardson and hammer thrower Gwen Berry have made significant political statements in their performances and protest. Slanderous comments about Richardson's sexuality and gender have been made. Many critics have disproved of the record-setting sprinter's hair, tattoos, and body piercings. Berry, who has been an outspoken critic of anti-African violence, publicly protested the U.S. national anthem at the Olympic trials.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night because Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me, because Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special.
Whitey on the Moon by Gil Scott-Heron.
To Whitey on the Moon.
This is Pacifica Radio's COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Tia Marie Coatley of Pacifica affiliate station WXOX 97.1 FM, Louisville, Kentucky. Louis Carlett is a Tokyo Union language teacher and the founder of Tozen General Union. He spoke with Pacifica from Tokyo about why his union has taken a position opposing the Tokyo Olympics and how it is affecting the people of Japan.
Tozen Union, last year, we took a strong position against holding the Tokyo Olympics. I think the reasons are pretty obvious to most people around the world. This is definitely not a safe time to be holding a large international sports event. Even if it were safe, it's definitely the wrong use of resources in the middle of a global catastrophe. That's the main reason that we just thought as a union, we have to raise our voice. which is very difficult because our own federation, Rengo, has been, for the most part, very pro-Olympics. And so we've been the lone voice among many unions within Rengo of opposing it.
The privatization going on worldwide in Japan, privatized hospitals, has that affected the ability of Japan to deal with this latest medical crisis with the pandemic?
Yes, I think so. Like, I've noticed over the years that hospitals have turned from, well, hospitals who take care of patients into businesses. And we see that more and more and more. Like, people who don't have the proper insurance and stuff like that, this is something that before I would only see in the United States. Now it's becoming a big issue. If you don't have insurance, they kind of try to do everything they can to talk you out of getting care at the hospital or even getting admitted. And another thing they do since Corona too is they push people off to other hospitals. And so not all hospitals deal with Corona. And so, you know, there's certain hospitals, like I know one hospital, Toronomon, which is the most prestigious hospital in Japan. They have like, they do handle Corona cases, and they have an entire floor that's devoted only to Corona cases, and they don't publicize it. So nobody knows what floor it is. Like often they're actually sent home. And that's something that before it became corporations would never have happened. People are often like they have Corona. They even have symptoms and they're told to wait at home, which is just unbelievable. And, you know, because there's just not enough beds and because everything's been corporatized, there are not enough like extra supplies laid out because it's not an efficient use of, you know, resources to maximize profit. So we see that a lot, you know, a lot of people being turned away are told, okay, wait at home until it gets really bad. And then they go to the hospital. So I think we're going to see more and more of that as cases increase as we start the Olympics. So
what do you see as the rise of militarism in Japan? Because Japan, while it's cutting back on social services and healthcare, is escalating increases in military budget to confront China.
One thing I noticed is that more and more young people are becoming very active. And I read articles about an interest in Marxism, which is really interesting. Like young Japanese, you know, like when I came to Japan a couple decades ago, young Japanese would never talk about politics. And they're kind of like famous for at least ostensibly not caring. Now, many more Japanese are starting to question the system. They're starting to read about Marxism and about, you know, previous struggles. In our union, in Tozen Union, we have a 26-year-old young Japanese woman who's very, very active and radical and devoted to the cause. And we see a lot of young activists getting very much involved. And I think it's a sign that, you know, people have had enough. And, you know, one of the great things about Japan now is that the Japanese people don't want the Olympics. Like we see that in poll after poll. There's a recent international poll where I think it was like 70 or 80% of the Japanese said no. And that's a big improvement since the nuclear power. Nuclear power, there was some opposition, but nothing like there is now. I mean, I don't think I know any Japanese who think it's a good idea to have the Olympics. You know?
The future of young people in Japan, like the United States, they are not able to get good jobs. They're part-time workers, the gig economy. How has that affected Japanese young people?
Well, I mean, I think that also has been a good impetus to get more interested in activism. I guess so many labor consultations, and our president also gets a lot of labor consultations from young Japanese working in, let's say, a restaurant or something, or really terrible conditions with no job security. I mean, nothing that used to be in Japan, like standard, like kind of like steady employment, kind of devoted to the company and the company is devoted to you. Nothing like that anymore. And most people, it's just precarious employment upon precarious employment, being fired, you know, on a whim, almost no future. And many Japanese are becoming more and more aware of the environmental crises. And I know many Japanese young people who are questioning capitalism, which is something that to me is really surprising in a good way.
And one of the issues of the Olympics that they've been used to for redevelopment, moving working class people, poor people out of their homes. And the district where the stadium was built and these housing, apparently that was a working class district that was renovated for the Olympics.
One of the most outrageous things is that even though corporations are going to make so much money, they've been calling out to so many people to become volunteers. In fact, Tozen Union was even called to be like to provide interpreters and stuff like that. In other words, they want people to work for free to support this venture that's going to make increase the profits of a few super large companies. In the same with previous Olympics in Japan, the workers are really the workers involved with construction are treated horribly. Everything is pushed aside in order to prioritize getting this event done no matter what happens. So you may have known recently that Thomas Bach of the IOC chairman, he said, the most important thing is the Chinese people. I don't know if you've heard that one, right?
No.
This is a true story. He said the Chinese people, like that's how it really symbolizes how out of touch these people are with people. I mean, he didn't even know what country he was in. All that he sees are the dollar signs that, you know, he and his friends are going to represent the money that he's going to make. And so.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. We've been talking with Louis Carlett. He is a co-founder of Tozen, Union of Interpreters and others in the Tokyo General Union in Japan. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This could be a teachable moment where anyone with half a brain understands that we're all just as good as the weakest link in the chain. With exponential growth, one for all and all for one is the only way to hope to slow such a viral run. With some of us in mansions and others left in tents, while what's drifting in the air won't be kept out by a fence. Once the pandemic is over, this could be a teachable moment, though at the price of so many lives lost, to be stratified and divided. Death is the cost. After all of the funerals, after we've mourned all the dead, might we then have a world that's bound by a common thread? A thread that is sown like a virus and connects us all worldwide. Maybe then we can say there's a reason your grandparents died. Once this pandemic is over, once this pandemic is over.
David Rovics, Once This Pandemic Is Over. Pacifica also spoke to Eric Sheehan, an organizer with No Olympics LA, who argues that the Olympics are beyond reform and should actually be canceled.
Not just this year, not just in Tokyo or LA, but everywhere. The Olympics have always been like a pretty unpopular thing in the cities that host it. But a lot of that opposition has historically been focused on budgets, taxes, and like finance. So in our first 3 years, No Olympics LA's analysis has explicitly rejected this framework in favor of a people-centered framework. So we like to ask who wins and who loses, and we advocate for the rights, for people's right to live and stay in their cities. So first I want to talk a little bit about the example of Los Angeles 1984, a supposedly profitable games. The architect of that games, Peter Uberoth, initiated the current full-throttle corporate capitalist Olympics and described the Olympics as the perfect vehicle to join the public and private sectors in partnership, an opportunity for private enterprise to enhance itself and show what is good about mankind. So an opportunity for private enterprise to enhance itself. The 84 games did finish with a $232 million profit. Now only $93 million of that actually stayed in the city, and it went to the LA 84 Foundation, which was a private charity, a nonprofit organization with no public control or oversight of any kind. Now in 2016, that same group, the LA 84 Foundation, had $22 million invested in Blackstone Group. Blackstone Group is the largest landlord in the world. One of their business tactics and models is buying up homes and rental properties in large concentrations in places like South LA and driving up those prices. Now, this supposed charity is literally profiting from the continued financialization of rental housing that's making cities unaffordable to their long-term residents all around the world. Every country that visited Tokyo with us last year was describing this as an issue that they were fighting. So when we talk about the rare financially successful Olympics, residents can't expect to benefit from that success. They'll likely actually be harmed by it when housing prices increase and their community is threatened or displaced or banished from where it once was. So the Olympics are first and foremost a grift. Residents don't ask for it. a handful of local and international wealthy power brokers put together a bid without the help or consent of the people living there. So PR firms are deployed to sell the city to the IOC. Politicians latch on to an easy popularity boost, and development companies vie for lucrative contracts. Now, the end result is almost always those with power enhancing themselves and they're cementing their economic and political footholds. So these boosters come from the same group every time around. We've got politicians, developers, and the security sector. Those are three big ones that we've identified. We spoke with Raquel Rolnick, who was the UN Special Rapporteur on the right to adequate housing from 2008 to 2014. And she described mega events as things that mobilize people's emotions to do things in cities that you could never do without enthusiastic public support. She called them a marketing device that offers cities as a place for financial capital to park. So when a bid is confirmed, there's a race for these development rights and a state of exception is ushered in, wherein corporations race to secure these contracts that would never be approved if not for the pressing needs of the coming Olympics. So governments will often sell public land at massive discounts, as with Tokyo 2020's Olympic Village. They'll approve development of lands previously protected, as with the sacred Mount Gariwang in Gyeongchang. They approve rush and expensive infrastructure projects that don't serve working class residents, as with Los Angeles's 28 by 28 initiative, which was already over budget before COVID happened. They also destroy and displace and banish entire communities to build parking lots, as in Rio in 2016. So the games feed on people's emotions, on their nationalism and pride in order to get political support for developments that will make massive profits while doing harm to people. Now, throughout 2019 and early 2020, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti became fond of telling crowds, "I sell LA for a living, and it's my job to sell LA." So that's what he's doing. He's literally marketing the city to these developers. Now, Garcetti and others in LA government called LA 28 a no-build Olympics because we already have stadiums and all that kind of stuff. But that no-build Olympics happened to coincide with what they deemed a hotel shortage crisis, wherein LA needed thousands of hotel rooms to be built to accommodate for the games and other upcoming events. Now, in the last 15 years alone, officials in LA handed out $1 billion worth of incentives to hotel developers in downtown LA alone, yet they're still demanding we build more today. Tenants are evicted to make way for tourists, and people experiencing homelessness are banished and forcibly relocated by police to make the tourists feel safe and present the image of a clean city, which connects pretty directly to Baron de Coubertin, the creator of the modern day Olympics, eugenicist standpoint. Now, policing is also a big focus for an Olympics LA, the business of policing. So LAPD themselves have told us, in order to host the Olympic Games, they're gonna need 3,000 new police officers, a 30% increase, just to hold the Olympic Games safely. LA 28 plans to use facial recognition technology in place of physical tickets for attendees, just as Tokyo planned for 2020. The business of policing is a big deal here. Now, one thing that No Olympics has recognized is that in our transnational efforts, is that policing is a big part of Olympic resistance. And another big part of Olympic resistance from all the groups that we've met and worked with is based around it's from groups that were formed to fight displacement and defend tenants. And this is no coincidence that all of the groups that gathered together in Tokyo about a year ago were focused on housing and land use. That's at the center of everything.
That was Eric Sheehan with No Olympics LA. And that concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all Pacifica stations and radio affiliates who contribute to the weekly production. This week's show was produced by Steve Zeltzer with production assistance by Ann Garrison and editing by Polina Vasiliev. Our executive producers are Akua Holt, Polina Vasiliev, and Steve Zeltzer. Special thanks to the Pacifica National Board's COVID Task Force. You can find this and all previous episodes on our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. I've been your host, Tia Marie Coatley, a Pacifica affiliate, WXOX 97.1 FM, Louisville, Kentucky. Thanks for listening.